which means that we're still friends after so many years. And that's the same attitude I have towards my mind when I meditate. Now, after all these years of meditation, my mind and I are really great friends. We've had some wonderful times together, and often I reminisce about that great meditation. Ah, I remember that meditation. Remember that meditation we had, mind, when we were in the jungle in the north of Thailand some years ago? Ah, yeah, that was a good one. And because we've had such good times together, it means when I try and start to meditate, as if my mind sees me coming and says, yeah, meditation, wow, wonderful, let's do it, rather than running away from me. And if you have like an ex-partner, you know, you've been married and you have this really terrible divorce, if you see your ex-partner coming on this retreat, you know, you may sit over there and the ex is over there, you're in the opposite side of the room, you may ask Daniel, sort of, you know, can I be in the hut the furthest away? I remember that happened when there was a Chinese man who died, and his wife, you know, had his ashes installed in the wall. And then, you know, she was, well, only a few months later, she got so sick, she was dying, and said, I want my ashes in the wall as well. And I asked her, you know, she only had a couple of months to go, do you want to be in the same pillar as your husband? No way! I want to be as far away from him as possible, please, Ajahn Brahm. The reaction was very funny. But, you know, someone you haven't had a good time with, of course you want to be as separate as possible. And this is the thing with the mind. You know, if you haven't had a good time with your mind, if you're always trying to be controlling it, and the mind has been resisting, you just, you know, don't like being in each other's company. That is the cause of restlessness. The biggest problem in meditation, why can't we just be here with our body, with our mind? It's because we haven't developed a beautiful relationship with our mind. We've always been telling it what to do. And if it doesn't meditate properly, we get angry at it and scold it, you stupid mind. So please remember, no scolding, forgiveness. If the mind wants to do stupid things, let it. It's just doing what it has to do. Now, like your friend, if he does some stupid things, oh, you forgive your friend. And give him kindness, give him forgiveness as well. Which means that you and your mind like hanging out together. You don't need to force the mind to stay with you. So that little bit of kindness, forgiveness, gentleness, which I said last night is such an important factor of Buddhism outside of meditation, we also put that into meditation as well. The same way we will deal with other people, hopefully, and animals and other beings in the world, we deal with our mind in exactly the same way, with this beautiful kindness and gentleness. Now, that does take more time for you to settle down. If you force the mind to watch the breath, you can do that straight away, but it's unsustainable. And also you get very tense and tired. The force gives quick results, but unsustainable, and your mind just falls apart afterwards. So in Buddhism, we have the slow, gentle, but sustainable path. It takes more time, but when you actually start to develop the mind, it's much more peaceful, it lasts much longer, and you can keep that mind still in peace for almost forever, because you've done it in a slow, methodical way rather than fast and quick results. So give yourself time on this retreat. You've got 9 days, another 8 days, that's plenty of time. So don't rush by forcing the mind. It's as if you have this little mind, it's like a flower, and you have to nurture it. And if you have a flower in a pot, you can't sort of say, right, I'm going away tomorrow, you better bloom today. Because I need you, I've got to give you to my girlfriend or a wedding or something. You can't do that to a flower. You have to nurture it, make sure it's well protected, and it's not damaged, it's watered, it's in the sunshine. And that way the flower, you know, eventually it will have to bloom. As you look at your mind like that little flower which you are nurturing, you're not forcing it, but but nurturing it. And that whole idea of nurturing your mind in meditation is so important. So how you nurture your mind in meditation is, you know, the mind is, unfortunately, interacts with your body, so you have to be kind to your body before even the mind will be able to be dealt with. The body has to come first. And that is one of the reasons for those of you who are coming here for the first time to this retreat center. Some of you might say, oh, it's too comfortable. The beds, the mattresses are too thick. Have our own en-suites. The food is too delicious. The schedule is just too easy. This is not just to make you happy physically. Because I know as a teacher, this is so important for you to get deep peace in your mind. The body has to be comfortable, first of all. So the good food, the nice accommodation, and the comfortable situation around here is deliberate in order for you to get good meditation. Once the body relaxes, only then can the mind start to relax. If you're hungry, if you're tired, if you're sick, if you're ill, it can be done if you're very skillful, but it's very difficult to get the mind to be peaceful and still. So first of all, make sure that you can sleep well at night. And to sleep well at night, please do little techniques, meditation techniques of letting go of past and future. Because so often it's when we take our worries of the past and fears of tomorrow into bed with us, we just don't sleep well. And so I've been teaching a few people that I hope that none of you sleep with your shoes on in bed. You always, even if it's slippers, you take them off before you get into your bed. And I ask people, when you take off your left slipper, look at the left slipper as your past. And you're taking it out, off, and putting it under your bed. So you're not taking the past into bed with you. Your right slipper is your future. So take that off too. You don't take that into bed with you. When you associate your slippers with the past and the future, and you put them under the bed or by the side for tomorrow morning, it means you're deliberately reminding yourself not to take the past and the future into sleep with you. And as you lay down in the bed, as I mentioned last night, just enjoy the fact that you can stretch out in one of the most comfortable seats or comfortable pieces of furniture in this whole retreat center. You can relax and stretch your limbs. You've got beautiful clean linen to sleep in, and it's wonderful, a nice soft pillow. And if that doesn't work, we've got the teddy bears. Where are the other two? We had two other teddy bears. They've disappeared. You can take this one there. We have the two small ones, the white ones. Anyway, they're so popular. Yeah, they're so popular. Yeah, okay. Well, we'll find them next time. They'll return home. They've just gone on holiday. So yeah, quite likely. So you can take the teddy bears to your cottage and get yourselves nice and comfortable. If that helps you sleep, I don't care. Just as long as you... That's a really big one, that one. But you can actually have a nice sleep at night. Because if you rest well at night, it means when you wake up in the morning, you have energy. And when you have that energy, it's so much easier to meditate. But, of course, there's something which I have to say at the beginning of every retreat. One of the biggest problems of human beings these days is what they call sleep deficit. Because we live such busy lives, we don't know how to rest at night. It means when you come on a retreat like this, the first couple of days you feel sleepy. And the best way of overcoming that hindrance of sleepiness is take a nap. That's an obvious thing, but please do it. If you feel sleepy after this talk, please don't fall asleep during this talk, but afterwards, or this afternoon, if you need to take a nap, please take one and enjoy it.
simply because I know that most people are tired. And when you're tired, that causes a huge amount of physical problems and sicknesses. And many diseases of our modern world come because people are just chronically tired. And if you can just take a rest, and rest well, rest deeply, then you find you feel good afterwards. Many, many times I've given this advice, and many, many times it's had 100% success. Tomorrow, when we start interviews, I'm sure that some people will come up, maybe the second, third day of interviews, and they say the same old thing, oh, my meditation is hopeless, last time it was okay, but this time it's terrible, I can't rewatch my mind, I keep thinking, and terrible things happen, and I really just, I don't know, should I go home, what should I do? And the advice which I give, which always works, I say, go back to your room, take a nap. But I've already slept. Go back to your room. Go back to your room. Take a nap. Don't put the alarm clock on. Just lay down however long it takes, that's how long it takes. When you get up, take a shower, have a cup of tea or fruit juice or whatever, and then come and meditate. And it's 100% success when people do that. They have this great meditation. Why? Because they've relaxed physically. And when the body is relaxed, then their mind can relax. For those of you who are traditional Buddhists, don't you remember the story of the Buddha? He was striving and struggling, not eating, and just sitting for so long, trying to get enlightened, and nothing worked. And then he decided what does work is the middle way. He started bathing again, hadn't bathed for weeks. And he started eating, not really just ordinary food. You know, remember the story of Sri Lankans, you know, Sujata giving that beautiful milk rice which she prepared for a heavenly being, for a little tree god. So this wasn't just ordinary food. This was like really high class food, almost as good as Bianca's food. What are you going to get here? And that worked. And then when the Buddha sat under the Bodhi tree, he didn't just sit on the bare floor. Sometimes when I saw that, he sat at the root of a tree. I know Bodhi trees, fig trees. They've got roots all over the place, and they're not smooth, they're all knobbly. You try sitting on that for about 5 minutes, and it pushes into your flesh, and you soon get a sore bum. You won't be able to sit for more than half an hour. He didn't sit on the roots. He got a big cushion made out of grass. He sat on that. The first Saffu, the meditation cushion from the Buddha. Now he did that because he knew his body had to be relaxed to be able to meditate. So I'm emphasizing that at the beginning. That's preparation. Because once your body is relaxed, it's well fed, well rested, and you come and it's so easy to meditate. You know, for years and years and years and years in Thailand, we used to get up really early in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning. We were only supposed to sleep 4 hours a night. And that was just so tough. I cheated. I only slept 4.5 hours. But that was not enough for me, because every morning, you know, with a few exceptions, you get up and go to the hall and you're always sleepy. And once I was, this was always a big problem, the sloth and torpor in the meditation early in the morning. But I didn't realize why. I was very stupid in those days. And once I went down to Bangkok to do visas, and at that time we had permission to stay at a very new accommodation block for visiting monks in Wat Bawon, which is a royal temple, that's a rich temple. And they had one room, this was, no, how long ago, 40-something years ago, no, 38 years ago probably, they had one room, the first room I'd seen in the temple, with aircon. And because we were getting up early in the morning, no, 3 o'clock, we got permission to get the key because no one else would use it at that time in the morning. And while we were there, when you turn the aircon on early in the morning, all my sloth and torpor had vanished. I was clear and there was no effort at all. And I realized all this sloth and torpor, it was not my mind was deficient. It was just cause and effect. It was physicality. I hadn't slept well, I wasn't eating well, and the climate just, You know, in the jungles, it's just so hot and humid and oppressive. Now, you may think that, you know, you're born in Sri Lanka. Imagine, you know, born in England, in London. You're not used to that, and it just makes you tired. And it was experiences like that you realized a lot of the problems in meditation are nothing to do with deficiency in your meditation technique. It's just because you haven't been put yourself physically in a good situation to meditate. So I realized, yeah, get enough sleep, not too much sleep, not too little sleep. Too much sleep makes you dull and stupid as well. Find that middle way, just the right amount of sleep. Now get yourself comfortable. If you are cold, put a blanket on. If you're warm, take the blanket off. Now try and get a nice temperature, nice seat, and a very pleasant surroundings, and you find meditation improves enormously just by adjusting the physical parts of meditation. Is why I say you can just decide, right, I'm only going to sleep 4.5 hours because that's what Ajahn Brahm did. And you can't do that. And you just get sleepy and you just get stressed out. You don't enjoy the meditation at all. So just take the right amount of sleep. Little naps the first couple of days whenever you want. And you'll find the meditation really gets very, very beautiful. So once your body is looked after, that means just like a car, you know, you can actually park it. As long as you turn the lights off inside, 1BPP809 white Corolla. As long as you turn the lights off inside and outside, you can park the car there and you know that when you leave 9 days' time, it'll still be there for you. That's like this body of ours. Once it's relaxed and well looked after, we can actually let it go. It's not bothering us anymore. But if you haven't looked after the body, there's always these coughs, these itches, these aches, these pains, and saliva and all this other stuff which keeps on disturbing us. So for goodness sake, be kind and caring to your body. If you're not used to sitting on the floor, the only reason I sit down, you know, on the cushions here is because that's how I got trained. You know, I went to Thailand when I was 23. And so my body got sort of trained to sit like this. And this is the most comfortable position. And I keep telling the monks, you know, always say, I want to go home to see my mum or my dad. And 7 years I was in Thailand before I first went back to see my family. And it was 7 years, those whole 7 years, I hadn't sat on a chair once in 7 years, always on the floor. So when I had to sit on a chair in the aircraft economy class, that hurt. That really did. I was in pain because I wasn't used to sitting on a chair. Can't I cross my legs somewhere? But you know, economy class is so tight, you know, you can't sort of cross your legs. So, you know, I understand how you feel if you have to sit on the floor, because it's like me sitting on a chair. It really hurt like hell. So the point is that you can sit on a chair if it's more comfortable for you. Sit on the ground if it's more comfortable for you. Get some more cushions. Get, you know, a cushion under your leg, a cushion under this leg, a cushion under your bottom, or whatever. Just know to get it as comfortable as possible. It's not indulging, it's being wise, looking after your body. Stretching it, you know, doing some exercises, some yoga. It's fine to do some yoga to stretch yourself early in the morning at any time of the day. Going for walks is wonderful because that exercises the body and makes it nice and loose again. It's why that usually we do walking, sitting meditation. It's why in this hall here we put the walking meditation halls right next to where you can sit. So you don't have to go out and disturb the meditation. If you're sitting meditation, your body gets a bit stiff. Very gently and slowly and calmly you go into the walking meditation hall, do some walking meditation and come back and sit again. So you can have hours of meditation, one after the other, without interrupting it so much. Even to go to the toilet, you know, we have toilets close by, but those of you who really want to get into deep meditation, see if you can get one of these little bottles they use in the hospitals. So you don't even need to get up from your seat, just under the rug. No one has tried that yet, but one of these days they're going to do that. But the whole thing is so that you can actually meditate nice and peaceful without worrying about the body. Now, when it gets to the mind, the body's nice and relaxed. How does the body get relaxed? body gets relaxed when you're aware of it. You notice my leg may be in a bad position. That's mindfulness. And I move it. And as I'm moving it, I'm feeling it. Is it comfortable yet? And when it really is comfortable, maybe the cushion needs to be adjusted under my bottom. How does that feel? Well, that feels okay now. No, it still needs a bit of adjustment there. There, that's good. That awareness gives you the feedback. And the kindness does the adjustments. That's why this mindfulness and kindness is what you use to relax your body. And you have to be very careful. Mindful, kindness. And don't just do it sort of just half-hearted. Just really be full-on. Aware of your body and kind to the body. And then everything starts to relax. And then even deeper than that, which is one of the great things which I've found with the practice of mindfulness and kindness, you can take a part of your body, because now I'm getting a bit old now, sometimes the knee aches after a little bit of meditation. I can focus on that sensation in the knee, and just zap it with kindness. Kindness is what relaxes things. I like telling when I used to play soccer in the streets of London, and just every time you went for a tackle, you kept on scraping the skin off your knees. And I would run crying, my 7-8-year-old kid, crying to my mummy, "Mummy, I'm bleeding." And she would simply kneel down and kiss the wound. "Kiss it better," she used to say. And straight away the pain went. I would remember that. I thought that was natural. As a kid, you just assume that everyone does this. You don't realize what's happening there. All it was is kindness took away all the pain. The kindness of a mother. Stroking your hair when you've got a fever when you were very young. And that kindness is a powerful force. So if I have an ache in the knee, I really, as best I can, this is metaphorically, kiss it better. Remember just the kindness, the great compassion of a mother to her son. And just the pain lessens. Sometimes it just goes away almost immediately. And my mindfulness and kindness working together can relax that part of the body. It's amazing just how powerful that can be, how it can relax. When I was over in, where was it recently, telling about the anxiety and how to overcome anxiety, when the person over in Adelaide, they had anxiety, asked, "Where do you feel it? Can you describe it to me?" Feeling it and describing it to a stranger was an exercise so they could be really mindful, really aware of that feeling. And then once she could describe it to me in detail, so I knew that she was aware, then I told her to take her hand and massage it with kindness. Or as I sometimes joke, but it's a true story, just go ask your boyfriend, Lloyd, to can you please just massage his tummy here, because she had severe panic attacks. She was bedridden for weeks. That's all she did. There was to massage the area with kindness. And then the physical feeling of anxiety went away, and with it the emotion went away. And I've taught that for such a long time now, and I always remember one of our members, Mukta, she told me one Friday evening, on a Thursday afternoon, she's a doctor, and she told me that one of her patients was on oxygen because had severe anxiety, and she went right through the list of medications, which is what doctors are supposed to do. If this doesn't work, try this other chemical. And she got to the end of the list, didn't know what else to do, so she heard me say this, so she told this patient, "Next time you have a panic attack, feel it in your body, take your hand, massage it, see you tomorrow." When she came to work on a Friday morning, the patient had the oxygen mask off, hadn't had the oxygen mask off for weeks. He said, "Well, what are you doing?" He said, "Oh, I'm better now. It worked. Thank you. I'm going home." And I was so touched that it was so fast. A little bit of kindness to anxiety. And it totally vanished. So in your body, kindness really works. It relaxes things. It relaxes the body. And your mindfulness gives you the feedback. You know it's relaxing. Now you do that to your meditation. When you start watching your mind, what comes up? All the problems of the past, the worries about the future, all those thinking. So what do you do when you're trying to meditate and all these thoughts come in your mind? Get out of here. No, I'm going to watch the breath. And you find that never works. And so then you say, okay, let go of the past. And that doesn't work either. It's just like saying to my knee, you're hurting. I'll let it go. It doesn't work. I've got to give it kindness. So whenever I have a thought of the past, I don't try and get rid of it. That's ill will. That makes the past even stronger, and it keeps coming back again and again. I'm kind to it. Hi, past. How are you? And when you soften the past, because that's what kindness does, it softens it, and softens it, and softens it, until it just vanishes, like the ache in my knee, or like the anxiety. So, the same with the future. Some fear, what's going to happen in the future, where you're going to go, what you have to do, all the problems in your life. Look at the future with kindness. And when your kindness, its hardness sort of disappears, it gets very soft. And once it's very soft, then it's easy for it to disappear. So I don't just get rid of the past and the future, I soften it with awareness and kindness. And in a very short time, just the past and the future has been softened out of existence, and all you're left with is just right now. And we all know that's an important stage of meditation, present moment awareness, Eckhart Tolle, the power of now. But how long can you stay in the present moment? If I ask you to be in the present moment right now, you can do it. That's not the problem, it's sustaining it. How come you can't hang out with the present moment? It is because you haven't developed friendship with the present moment. You're not kind enough to it. So when I'm in the present moment, I say present moment, hi, how are you going? And you want to stay? You can go if you want. So sometimes the present moment vanishes, but I don't tell it off afterwards. Stupid present moment. You tell me, you can okay, you can go if you want, you can come if you want. That kindness, that softness is what sustains the awareness of the present moment. Classic story. I love these stories of real life which people come and tell me. I'll do the Singapore girl rather than the English and the Australian girl. This young Singaporean girl, she said she was about 6 years of age in one of the big apartment blocks in Singapore. And she had a big argument with her mummy. Mummy, I don't love you anymore. I'm leaving home. And this mother in Singapore, really, really smart girl, she said, okay, darling, I'll help you pack. And so they packed this little girl's suitcase, you know, this tiny little suitcase with Mickey Mouse on it, I don't know what's on it, and all the important things in her life, like a doll, a teddy bear, whatever else she wanted to pack. And the mother said, no, here's $20 for your lunch. And took her to outside of the apartment, to the elevator, to the lift. And when the lift came, the doors opened, the little girl went in. Bye-bye, mummy. Bye-bye, darling. Don't forget to write. As a little six-year-old left home for the first time. And I can picture her when she was telling me this. She was laughing all over her face. You know, tears. Actually, she was rolling on the floor. Now, up in Bodhinyana in the dining hall. I remember this. And what happened next? He said, I got as far as the ground floor. By the time I got to the ground floor in the elevator, I was already homesick. Only 6 years of age. So I pressed the button of the floor where I lived. And so the elevator went up again. And as the doors opened, my mummy was there. She hadn't moved. Welcome home, darling. Well, that's just a beautiful, smart mother. They know the child won't go that far. And if they try and stop it, it will go further. So, I'll help you pack. Here's $20 for you. I think she kept the $20. And she came back again, almost immediately. And that's exactly how your mind works. If your mind wants to go off somewhere, bye-bye, pack its bags, give it $20, or your credit card, I don't know what you use these days, and off your mind goes wherever it wants to go, but be kind to it. And that means your mind will always come back to you pretty quick and stay with you. Why? Because it likes you, and you like your mind. That's why it hangs out with you. That's why you can stay in the present moment. You use force, and it's like you're the prison guard. And as soon as your mind escapes from the jail you put it in, it will never come back. So be careful. I know that I was taught when I was young as a monk, if your mind wanders off, just gently bring it back. It wanders off again, gently bring it back again. And my mind kept on wandering off until I got so frustrated I wasn't gentle anymore. Get in here. Watch your breath, you stupid mind. And it got worse. That is not the way to meditate. Don't gently bring the mind back. If you do that, you'll just get frustrated. And it'll just go off again. You can invite the mind back if it wants to. But give it that beautiful sense of freedom. And then when you get a good relationship with your mind, you never need to force it. It stays with you because of kindness and awareness. So you stay in this present moment, and I've spent a lot of time just talking about these preliminaries. And I do this because when I first came to Western Australia, the senior monk, the teacher, was this monk called Ajahn Jacaro. And he gave me some really beautiful advice once. And he said, Ajahn Brahman, I respect your ability in deep meditation, but whenever you give a talk, you tell people about just these high states of jhanas and how to deal with nimittas, which is all very good. But he wanted me to spend more time explaining the preliminary part of meditation. You know, how even to get to present moment awareness, to get people grounded first of all. And he gave me good advice, because this is the hard part, just getting to the present moment. Once you're in the present moment and you can watch the breath, the rest is actually quite easy. Just getting the foundation right, that's the difficult part. So once you get into this present moment, just stay in the present moment. Many of you will say, what do I do next? That's a bad question. Alarm bells should ring, the red flag should come up, the red light should start to flashing. There is no next in the present moment. There's only now. And this becomes a beautiful place you can hang out into timelessness. We are such prisoners of time. We already know, what time is lunch? Who cares what time lunch is? You know, your body will know when lunch is. You know, if you're just meditating, your friends will come and say, come on, it's time for lunch. Now, lunch happens. So you don't need to worry too much when it's going to happen. And the same with the rest of the stuff in your life. How much is it that we have to worry about all this time business? When we have to get up to go to work? When we have to get the submission into the tax office? When we have to go and finish this assignment? Getting to work? Going to home? You know, we've even got an appointment, which the only appointment you have to ever keep is the one at the funeral parlour. But that comes when it comes. You don't need to worry about that. But all this time business, that really sort of puts us in a prison and makes us very tense. And we're trying to relax here. So see if we can forget about time, if you possibly can. If you really are courageous, you can take your watches off and take your clocks off. Hide them. And I guarantee you will know what time lunch is, what time breakfast is. For those of you who go over to Bodhinyana Monastery, around the kitchen dining room, you'll find that most of the time it's very quiet there. But about 10:15, all the birds suddenly appear, because they know that it's lunchtime, and they get something to eat as well. I've never seen the parrots with a watch on. They don't know what time it is, but they know when it's lunchtime. And when they do, there's hundreds of them come there. You know, you see them there, you know, feed them and stuff. But they don't have to wear watches, they know. So imagine doing that in this retreat. Watches gone. Clocks disappeared. Free from the prison of time. So you meditate, and you don't care. Is it 10 minutes, half an hour, 40 minutes? Who cares? I'm just going to meditate. If I'm peaceful, I'm in the moment, that's all the time I ever have just now, and I'm never going to measure time. I'm never going to even think of the word next. Only now is the only word in my vocabulary. Not last, not next, but just now. If you focus in this present moment, of course, you know, there's nothing to do. Because in this meditation, the next stage is deeper in the one you're in right now. That's why I alluded to, you know, one of the similes which I developed, which is one of the most beautiful, the thousand-petal lotus. I alluded to that last night. How does a lotus open up the warmth and the light of the sun in the early morning? The warmth stands for kindness, the light stands for mindfulness. Mindfulness and kindness on a lotus, the outer petal opens up. Then it reveals the petal inside. That inner petal cannot receive the light and the warmth of the sun yet, because the outer one stops it. But once the outer one opens up, then the inner one can receive the light and the warmth of the sun, and that opens up too. Which means that that next layer of petals can open up. And that's how a lotus opens up, layer by layer, because of the light and the warmth of the sun. And one of the nice parts of that simile is the deeper you go into the lotus, the more beautiful, the more fragrant, and the more delicate are the petals. And that's a great simile for the way of meditation. All you do in meditation is keep the light of mindfulness, the warmth of kindness on this body and mind, and it opens up all by itself when it is ready to open up. You cannot do it. All you have to remember is just keep mindfulness and kindness working on this body and mind, and it develops by itself. So you're in this present moment with awareness and kindness to this moment, and this moment stays with you. And as it stays with you, you find you get into this wonderful stage of meditation called silence. The mind isn't thinking anymore. It's not noting, it's not giving things names. It's not trying to remember things. It's just right there, silently aware. And that's such a beautiful stage of meditation. For those who don't know what I'm talking about, I am now once again going to do the old exercise so everybody can understand what silent awareness means. Because as I am speaking, I want you to notice the reaction in your mind to the words I'm saying. Because as I am speaking, you will begin to notice some pauses between my words. In those spaces between my speech, what was happening in your mind? You were aware, but not a thought was going on in your head. You were silently aware. It's a very simple exercise, very effective, because instead of me talking to you, I'm letting you experience what silent awareness is. There it is again. And so, when you hang out in the present moment, just the mind has this beautiful silent awareness, continuous. That by itself is just so wonderful. You know what it's like if you're in the city and it's so noisy. The other day, a couple of days ago, I had to go into Rockingham Shopping Mall to get the check to pay the ATO for Brian Creek's estate. Oh, that is, for me, we call that the hell realms, a shopping mall. And the driver was with me, Taz, at the time, and said, what am I supposed to do? How do you go into a shopping mall? And I say, this is my technique. Head down, straight ahead. And you just, you know, you knew where you got to go. Head down, straight ahead, and don't stop, and get out as quick as you can. Because for someone who lives a very simple, peaceful lifestyle, that is just so much sensory impingement coming at you at all sides. And, it's really, you know, for a monk, it's a yucky place. I call that the hell realms. And I'm sure that, you know, there must be some hell realms which you go to if you misbehave and get reborn into these terrible shopping malls. Oh, well, I think anyway, the shopping mall hell. But anyway, so you have to go in these places and you get out afterwards. But you know, when it comes to sort of the meditation, just becoming still, it's so wonderful. As soon as I got out of that hell realm, it was just so wonderful. Wow, you could actually breathe real air instead of just the fake air in the shopping mall. And it was quiet, even though it was in the car park, it was much better than inside. So, that's what happens when you get into silence. It's this huge relief. All the noise is gone. Wow. Have you already noticed how quiet this place is, Jhana Grove? You know, this Australia is very blessed. It has these forests which are actually peaceful. You go to the forests in Sri Lanka or Thailand or Malaysia and they're really noisy. All the cicadas and all the animals and birds never sort of stopping. It's just, it's like it is a zoo in there. But here in Australia, it's just so quiet, especially at night time. And that's why you come here, and that's one of the first things you notice, the beautiful, brilliant silence of Jhana Grove. Oh, it's wonderful. For me, I like the caves in the world. The reason I like the caves is because wherever you find a cave, you go deep in the cave, you can't hear anything at all. Even though sometimes you go in the caves and there's a storm outside and thunder is crashing and you go in the cave, you can't hear a thing. And that's why I like those caves. It is so silent. It's like an escape from the noise of the world. And what the Buddha said in this stage of meditation, he called that the cave of the heart. Don't disturb the silence. Don't try and capture the silence by writing it down, what it feels like. Don't think about it. Just enjoy it. And straight away, if that's all you ever get in meditation, just silence for an hour or two. Wow, that's incredible. That's so wonderful. It's delightful. And that's the next thing to emphasize in meditation. The deeper you go into the lotus, the more beautiful the petals are, and you have to be blind Freddy, as they say, not to notice the delightfulness of the beautiful petals. Just even like this morning, nice meditation this morning after breakfast, sitting by the stupa, just watching the clouds go by. It's a beautiful sky. There's so much beauty in Jhana Grove. Enjoy, indulge in just the skyline, stars at night. Just the warmth of the sun when it first comes out. Just came out from between the clouds this morning. You just feel it on your skin. That's delightful. You are aware in this moment, delighting in this moment. That keeps you there. Because this is what happens next in the meditation. Deeper into the lotus, the more delightful it gets. Your silence. Wow. It's piti sukha. This word in Pali, the delight of meditation. And very often people then can start experience their breath. You've all heard about breath meditation. And sometimes people, they start, okay, sit down, watch your breath. That is such bad teachings. The reason is because you're not ready yet to watch the breath. You haven't prepared. But you know, if you're really silent and peaceful and you've got some happiness there, it's just so easy to watch the breath. The best way is to let the breath come to you. Don't go looking for it. Soon it's the only thing left moving. And that's how I meditate. You're just watching the present moment and you get really silent and really enjoying this. And then the next thing you know, you're watching the breathing. The reason is because it's the only thing left, which is moving. And if you can allow the breath to come to you rather than going watching the breath, when the breath comes, it's always delightful. It's always lovely. It's soft. When I go looking for the breath, I actually interfere with it. I go looking for it. When I allow it to come to me, it's a natural breath, easy, soft, just a breeze to look at. And so you stay with the breath, just watching the breath come in, go out. Oh, this is fun. I can do this for hours, and you often do it for hours. And sometimes you're sitting here meditating, it's lunchtime, you know it's lunchtime. Oh, watching the breath go in, go out, it's lunchtime. Well, what the hell, I'm going to watch the breath go in and go out. Oh, this is really good. You don't want to have lunch. You can have breakfast later on, you can have a snack, there's all sorts of stuff you can eat. You know, as a monk, you know, I'm like a lawyer. I know all the loopholes of what you can eat without breaking the eight precepts. So if you need any help, come and see me. I can give you all the allowables, we call it. And if there's the slightest loophole, we exploit it out of kindness. So that way you can actually you can meditate and have a wonderful time with the breath. And of course, once you get into the breath meditation and you're having fun, the rest is, you really get off into the bliss states and have a great time in meditation, just watching the breath go in and go out. Oh, it's so beautiful, really incredibly beautiful. The delightful breath, and delight gets so great, the breath gets so soft. Because you're not putting any effort in. You don't need to actually have much oxygen. You're not doing anything. Your car is not idling, but the engine's being turned off. You don't need gas. The breath, it gets so light because it doesn't need to metabolize anything. You're almost perfectly still. So the breath gets so soft, it vanishes. And now you get into the really juicy stuff of meditation. Beautiful lights, limiters in the mind. Wow. This is weird. This is crazy. This is beautiful. This is amazing. And you really start to bliss out. And then if you're lucky, you go right into the center of those lights and get into the jhanas. Wow, this is big time. It only happens when you do the preparation right. Get the preparation right, lots of letting go, lots of kindness. And that's all you ever do, present moment awareness. A lot of time people lose the present moment. They're getting into a nimitta. When's the jhana going to happen? What do you mean, when? Time is gone. What should I do next? Another bad idea. You start thinking, you start wanting to control again. You got so far by letting go, by not doing anything, by being still. In the last moment, you forget. And you think, okay, it worked so far, but now I'm going to take control and I'm going to do the jhanas. And of course, that's why people keep failing. Don't do anything. Shh. You're the passenger. Just let it happen. Present moment awareness, so just be kind, be mindful. That's all you need to do. Nothing more. And the meditation gets so wonderful. And of course, people say, but Ajahn Brahm, it hasn't happened. Because you want it to happen, that's the problem. That's losing the present moment. As soon as you want something, off in the future somewhere. You're not looking at what you have, you're looking at what you want. And you just go straight back to the Buddha's Four Noble Truths. It shows you when you want something, it's the cause of suffering. Third Noble Truth, Second Noble Truth, craving leads to suffering. Suffering is because of craving. If you're suffering, you've been craving. So don't think that the meditation teaching is wrong. Don't think that you can't meditate. It's nothing to do with teachings or the teacher or the Buddhism or the ability or ability not to meditate. It's because you've been craving. You wanted something. Wanting causes suffering. Second noble truth. What's the third noble truth? Letting go of wanting leads to nirvana. Would you like to experience nirvana? Let go of wanting. Put the causes in place and everything else happens by itself. So we let go of everything. I'll do the four ways of letting go tomorrow. But this is what we do. We let go in this moment. Don't want anything in this whole world. What do you want anyway? Aren't you good enough already? Who says Ajahn Brahm's not good enough? This is who I am. This is what I is, so I'm very happy with this. Who says I'm too fat? This is just right for a monk of my stature.
I'm totally at peace with myself. When you're at peace with yourself, when you don't want yourself to be anything different, you are content. Isn't it wonderful to be content with yourself? Not trying to change yourself or cure yourself of all your diseases and all the things wrong with you and all the psychological damage which you've got and all this other stuff which people are trying to get rid of. How about being content with yourself? How about being content with your meditation? How about being content with your wisdom? Then you are wise. And also, once you're content, content is not sort of a static state. When you're content, the contentment builds in power. Contentment upon contentment upon contentment. Peace gets stronger and deeper and more powerful. I said this to one of the people in Bodhinyana the other day, that sometimes the journey of meditation, you get so peaceful, you think, well, no way can you get more peaceful than this. Absolute peace. The pinnacle of peace. The summit of peace. Then you find, surprise, surprise, there's a summit even more peaceful than that. I was like the mathematical simile of infinity. When I was young, I always thought infinity was the biggest number in the whole world. You can't get anything bigger than infinity. By definition, infinity is the largest. And then, for those of you who've done maths, simple mathematical proof. There is numbers infinitely bigger than infinity. And so they call usual infinity alpha null. Infinitely bigger than infinity is alpha 1. And this number is infinitely bigger than the number infinitely bigger than infinity. It just goes on and on. So that really bends your mind. And this is what happens with peace. You think this is an infinite peace. And then you find a peace which is infinitely deeper than the infinite peace you just had. It gets great fun meditating. You really get into incredible states. Infinitely more blissful than the infinite bliss of infinity. That's what it feels like. You have some great fun in this. So this is what actually happens. But if you want it, no way. You're blocked. If you just let things be. And all craving, all wanting. In this moment, just being kind. Just being aware of what's happening now. Such a simple path of meditation. If that doesn't work, very simple, another simple teaching number 2. That's one of the stories in Open the Door of Your Heart, the Emperor's 3 Questions. Remember that story, hopefully. When is the most important time? So, when is the most important time to meditate? When is the most important time to get enlightened? Now it's all you've got. What is the most... the question was, who is the most important person? The one right in front of you. What's the most important meditation object? The one right in front of your awareness. Even if it's sloth and torpor, that is the most important meditation object for you. Why? Because it's right here, right now. Restlessness. If you're restless, that's the most important meditation object. Our difficulty in meditation is when we say, this isn't important, this is bad, this is wrong, I want to get rid of it. That is why we don't succeed in meditation. Whatever it is you experience in meditation, it's important. And what's the most important thing to do? Take care. So the Emperor's 3 Questions, which is supposed to be in life, I've been using that as basic meditation teachings. Now is the only time you have. The experience right in front of you, right now, this, whatever it happens to be, is the most important in the world. Don't judge it. This is bad. This is restlessness. I want to get nimittas. If you think like that, you'll never get anywhere. Whatever it is right now, it's most important. Value it and care for it. There's beautiful kindness. And if you develop that, that leads all the way into the deepest of meditations. So simple but very profound. So, off you go and just whatever. sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So have a great day. And rest whenever you want to. No?